WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are a positively through bye week, and we're playing football around here. We think we're pretty good, and we'll be doing some crab cake each and every Friday. We are doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play this week. We're doing double service because of my backache last month. We'll be at Silver Spring Mining this week, as well as at the Chop Tank, and then next Wednesday, we're doing it at Fadley's on Wednesday, and then Friday at Nick's Grandstand Grill. You can find the whole schedule out on our social media. I've been trying to get this guy on for a while, and I usually wait for the biggest fire in the National Football League I can find. And I thought 650,000 emails, Dan Snyder, John Gruden, cover-up, good reason to reach to Ken Belson, who covers the news part, the grown-up part of the National Football League for the New York Times. But then I invited him 2 weeks ago thinking, well, this will be good. We'll talk this. We'll talk Lamar. And then Congress is getting involved, and Stan Kroenke's rolling on the boys up in New York. So it is always a pleasure to welcome this guy. He covers the league better than anyone. He's in New York and is suffering with the Mets up there and is a great follow at L_Belson, the original Belson. Ken Belson joins us here from the New York Times. Nothing going on in your department the last couple of weeks, right? No brush fires in the league or anything, right?
Only week 8. Yeah.
I want to give you a full introduction because I've never really had you on video. I've done the research on your Japan work and Hello Kitty and all of this other wild stuff. But you're one of those guys that sort of helicoptered into this, right? Like, you didn't run around on the Jets beat for 20 years and do, you know, I know Gary Myers. I know all the New York guys. Glauber's got a book out with Keisha. You come at this from the grown-up department of let's cover the league seriously and not from the angle of, well, you know, X's and O's and defenses and offense. The league as an entity to cover is one of the most fascinating groups of people in America, right?
Yeah, well, so I've been in this business for 25 years, almost all of it as a business writer. I started in Japan, as you noted, and wrote a book about Hello Kitty while I was there. I've covered every sort of corner of the business world. And when I came back to the States in 2004, I covered media, cable, wireless companies. And then I covered business in the metro section. And around that time, I had pitched an idea of the business of sports to our editors. But the problem is, it's neither sports nor business, and nobody wants to pay for it. So, you know, budget-wise. So it took until around 2009 to get an invitation from the sports department to join during the recession, actually. And sports was struggling. Many leagues were struggling. So it was that entry point that I came into this business and was a general writer, general sports business writer for several years, covered the Olympics, covered all sorts of sports and different issues. And then in 2013, I had been covering the concussion litigation that had started in end of 2011, maybe 2012.
The original sin, as they call it, right?
Yes. And something, well, it's complicated. But in any event, I was writing those stories at that time. There was a federal judge who got involved, and of course, now it is a settlement. At the time, it was a big cloud over the league. And so my editor said to me in 2013, why don't you just cover the league or issues around the league? I don't need you in the press box. I don't need you at practice on Tuesday or Thursday or whatever. There's so much going on with the league. It is kind of the standard bearer for other leagues. And what happens in the NFL tends to happen first before it gets to the NHL or MLB and so forth. So that's the approach I have and had. And it was really my editor. Instinct that there's just so many issues out there, legal, financial, medical, so forth, social issues, the Colin Kaepernick issue, you know, you name it, there's something going on in the NFL. And to be honest, every single year I've covered the league, it's now my 9th season, there's been some gigantic drama. The first season was Richie Incognito and bullying. 2014 was Ray Rice. 2015 was Deflategate, and on and on and on. So my editor had the right instinct to sort of give me license to mix and match as the seasons developed. And it's been a real luxury, I have to say.
Well, turned into a hell of a book for Leibovich. I have him on from time to time. Are you old school fan? I mean, were you a Giants season ticket holder? Did you have any? Were you in Japan watching games at 4 o'clock in the morning like I've tried to do in Tokyo, which is you can't get the games in Asia. I mean, the little known secret. I was in Korea 2 years, couldn't find a game. I'm watching it on FaceTime with my kid holding the screen up. We think of it as being all encompassing. And in Europe, to some degree, it is. The kid that saved my wife's life back in 14 watches football every single week. All of his friends, young people in Germany and in England, I've been to the games over there and seen the impact. But there is something about how much we love the game in this country, right? And we love the game almost so much that you're a bad guy for reporting the truth, right? Like, stick to sports, stay on the field, like all of that. And Luke, my partner, this week, we had a long throwdown about Bisciotti disappearing, you know, how PR is, how people like me that have had a press pass for 38 years now have no access to players to even ask them questions anymore, that a lot of things have changed. But the business of the league, I'm probably most interested in it because in 1984, when I was a 16-year-old kid working at the paper, our football team pulled out in the Mayflowers. And from that moment forward, everything about being involved in Baltimore sports has been about the money to seed Camden Yards, the money to steal a football team, all of these things that are when people say, hey, why? We have to come to people like you and say, why does the NFL behave the way they do? And I thought last week, since I've invited you on, the story that Wickersham got of running minutes inside of a meeting that was as nasty a meeting as they've had in the modern era of the NFL when they're talking about suing each other. Last week was a whole different sort of scab ripped open on this, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, money is what drives all of it. And, you know, my approach, having been in the business section for many years in various beats, is that, you know, the NFL or any of these leagues are frankly, you know, entertainment businesses. You know, you could make the same argument. We have New York Times has several people in Hollywood covering the movie industry and the entertainment industry. And this is really not much different. The difference, I believe, is that most kids grow up thinking they can be players. And so they have a different attachment to the entertainment that you would with the movie industry or perhaps the music industry.
Well, the tribal part of it sort of, you suspend belief. That's not really Ray Rice punching his girl in the elevator, because Ray would never do that because he runs the football. I mean, there and I've dealt with that here too. And I think anyone that's been in the sports business understands that there's truth and fiction, and people don't really have a whole lot of time for they don't really want to know how the sausage is made.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, that's, they're right, and that's fine, and that shouldn't stop me from trying to uncover some of the uglier parts, I guess, of these businesses. And, you know, that's what reporters are trained to do and ought to do. And there, by the way, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of people to report on injuries and strategies and coaches and players and so forth. And that's fine, too. I'm not dismissing it. I'm just saying that I think fans and frankly, Americans, given how powerful the NFL is, deserve to see behind the curtain a little bit about how the sausage is made.
All right, so the emails. Let's start with the original story from a couple weeks ago and John Gruden. My understanding, my street understanding of this is pretty obvious hit on Mark Davis for making too much money in Las Vegas. Pretty obvious hit on John Gruden. And, hey, look over there while we do the sleight of hand, the card trick of Dan Snyder. That we've moved on from that. We're going to protect the anonymous and the all of these just bullshit, ridiculous things that Goodell is saying to move your eyes onto, hey, the Ravens play this week, right? And it's easy to do in week 8, as you pointed out. But I think this is different, and Congress has gotten involved since I invited you onto the show. Give me a little synopsis of the last couple of weeks and the things you're learning and the things you're reporting on, because this is when I saw the Wickersham thing last week, I called it incendiary. I've been at dozens of these owners' meetings with you, next to you, the Biltmore, the Boca Raton, back and forth, Palm Beach, the Bray, all of that. And The one last week really caught me by surprise because the league's losing a lawsuit and now Congress is getting involved. There are some angry women in D.C. that have some serious representation. And there's some people like you in the media that just aren't going to let it go. And they're not going to be moved around like ESPN, Fox, NBC. All the partners have not reported on anything regarding the St. Louis lawsuit. And that's why I turn to people like you. And quite frankly, it makes you a gem in all of this that there are a handful of people that are covering the really dirtiest stories of the league's cover-ups.
Well, the league, you know, there's several parts to what you said there. One is the Gruden emails, which, you know, frankly, John Gruden was not the focus of the Washington football team investigation. He has no connection to the team other than his brother, Jay. And so his emails were swept up because Bruce Allen's emails were looked at, and Bruce Allen was the former president of the team. That's separate, I believe, from the Washington issue, which is its own ecosystem of bubbling trouble, I guess, with the protests about the lack of transparency in the investigation. You know, the Raiders feel, and Mark Davis pointedly spoke to the media at the end of the owners' meeting last week and said, you know, the league had these emails for a long time. Why did they wait until a day before the original Wall Street Journal story came out to let us know about them and to send us copies? And so in Mark Davis's eyes, he's wondering why or suspects that the NFL was dragging its feet. And maybe there's something more nefarious to that. I don't know. You know, there's been several accusations, but I think actually Gruden was sort of collateral damage in all of the Washington investigations. But, you know, the league chose not to receive a printed report, and that was back in July. And I think that surprised many people. I was on the conference call with the league at the time, and many questions were asked. Why wouldn't you take possession of one? You know, it's fair to remind people that the Deflategate report was released. The bullying report was released. The Ray Rice report was released. We, meaning the public, had an access to 150 pages of documentation and explanation, and here we didn't. And I think a lot of people suspect that it was not put in written form because the league didn't want documentation of it.
Can Beth Wilkinson be subpoenaed? I mean, you know, where can Congress take this? I mean, because this is the way wealthy people behave, you know, whether it's involved with taxes or Donald Trump or in regard to bone spurs in Vietnam or whatever it would be, that unless the police come, and if there's no police and there's no FBI, and if the police are on your side and Roger Goodell is the cop, hiring Beth Wilkinson, you know, I mean, whenever these leagues do that, we're going to hire Robert Mueller. He's the best in the business. We're not going to listen to a damn word he says. But it is amazing that without oversight of some kind, they will act badly. I don't think there's any question about that, whether it's brushing under the carpet CTE or whether it's the Ravens trying to hide a video from a glass elevator in Atlantic City. Everybody's cover your ass. And then we learned that Goodell's made, you know, $64 million a year the last 2 years. The concerns about what's in these emails, if they're so clean, they would be released, right? But Congress is going to get after us. What does that even mean when Congress goes after the National Football League?
Well, it's interesting. Reading the letter from the two congresspeople who wrote to the NFL asking for information, there's at the very end of it, there's a series of explanations of how to hand over data. And there are a series of I don't want to call them loopholes, but ways in which the league can justify not handing over certain types of information. So I don't think it's going to be as simple as here's 650,000 emails, take a look. There will be things that will be protected either for legal people's names, things will have to be redacted. It's a huge amount of information. And to be perfectly honest, I was a little surprised the league even claim they had 650,000 emails because it just set off a firestorm of people saying, well, what else is there besides the John Gruden emails? And look, you know, 99% of them may be terribly boring and just, you know, business operations. But the 1% of 650,000 is still a lot of emails. So it's an open question. And I don't know why the league did that. It invited more scrutiny than it did suppress it.
Well, it almost makes you – it invites some sort of thought of guilt, right? I mean, shrouded in secrecy.
I don't know why they brought up the number. They could have just said we read many instead of 650,000 and let people just imagine what that might be. But 650,000 sounds like a lot of information, right? I mean, it's just your mind would calculate it that way. And as I said, even if most of it is boring, some of it might not be. And we've only seen a handful of those emails.
Dan Snyder's been a peach, huh? Through all this, right? I mean, he's not really an owner, but he shows up in pictures, and then he has the Sean Taylor chicanery, and this has gone on for 20 years. I mean, it's gone on in his personal life, his business life, his Washington football team life. His team doesn't have a nickname. The people hate him, and they won't roll over on him, will they? I mean, a little different than a groin rub for the Patriots owner or drug problems for Jimmy Irsay or whatever their indiscretions are. You know, the NBA was pretty quick to move on Sterling. And after that, the NFL was pretty quick to dispose of Jerry Richardson. I mean, look, I'm in Baltimore. Peter Angelos has run my franchise completely into the ground. He's eating pudding. No one knows who's owning the team. They're on a 2-year borrowed lease because the 30 years are up. They're wearing cowboy boots in Nashville. And there's no reporting on that either because the New York Times doesn't exist in Baltimore. The reporting part of this is the pressure that makes these things happen. And everybody in Washington's tried to upend Daniel Snyder and really the fan base with just the truth. The truth is ugly enough. I mean, the track record of all of the awful things that have happened are there, yet the owners won't dispose of him. I find that to be a fascinating case study because the NBA had no problem pulling the thorn, and it would feel to me like long-term, and this is my baseball side of me, that if Seelig would have given the middle finger to Angelos and said, we're putting the team in Washington, you sue us, have a good day, and at some point you'll die and we'll pull the franchise from you and your family. And instead it worked the other way. You know, Angelos just sued him for them for 15 years. I feel like the same thing will happen with Kroenke, Davis, all of these guys. They just lawyer up, but the government creates a different thing, I think, and the Me Too movement and Snyder's indiscretions involving women, that I do think this, there will be an end to this, and it probably won't end well for Dan Snyder. It's just how much blood is the league going to take on in this, in a franchise that used to mean something?
Well, I think the owners in general, and frankly in any league, are very, very reluctant to push out another owner, both legally because of how it would get entangled and because it could be them next. Do you want to set a precedent of pushing Dan Snyder out or any of the owners for XYZ because it could be you next? Name the problem. And frankly, you know, all we know right now is he's made the team isn't playing well. He's been offensive to fans. He's pissed off other people. He may not be a nice guy. I don't know. But is that enough to take away a multi-billion-dollar franchise? I mean, it'll be tied up in court forever. Sterling was different, I think, because he was on tape saying racist things. It got out in public. So far, we don't have that in any of the cases with the NFL, and so I don't see that as a, you know, something imminent. Congress is different, but they can't take away his franchise either. They don't have jurisdiction over a private franchise. So this is mostly for them pressuring him and trying to raise issues around the Me Too movement.
Ken Belson is our guest. He's with the New York Times. He covers the important stuff, the grown-up stuff, not the toy department of sports and the business of sports and the National Football League and the Kraken and climate change and different things like that. Last thing for you, Kroenke. I was in St. Louis a month ago chasing the Rolling Stones around. I was there on a Sunday, a league Sunday. It was the day that Tucker hit the kick in Detroit. And I was in the Budweiser bar across from the baseball stadium, and they had won 16 games in a row then. It's Cardinals Central. And the reason the Stones are there is because they lost their football team. And along the way, I started, you know, reading along and following Dan Wallach and various people that I know through the world of Twitter and all the St. Louis reporters, and whether it was, you know, Howard Balzer years ago that said they broke every rule that they ever made by moving the franchise. It's certainly something they didn't consider when Jarrett came in the room down there and put the Inglewood platform out. But everything the league researched and did was about the Raiders and the Chargers moving. And then at the and you were a part. You were there. You witnessed it. They blew it up in one day and never really figured this out. And now they've got a billion-dollar treble problem, which is very familiar to me in Baltimore because eminent domain was a phrase I learned at 16 based on the National Football League and Mayor Hudnut and Bob Ert, all of these things that went on in my childhood. Seeing the Kroenke thing now and in L.A., and we're going to be at the Super Bowl in 8 or 10 weeks. Lamar might be there and all of that. But they've got a hell of an in fight now, and it's a different kind of fight than I think they've ever had in regard to one owner saying, we're all in on this, and other owners standing up and saying, that's not the way we remembered it like 72 months ago, right? So you've been a part of this from the beginning, covering it all. I guess there was – everybody in St. Louis said you can't do that. And then it's F you sue us, right? And that's the NFL, and that's where we are. But apparently they're getting their ass kicked in this lawsuit for real.
Yeah, it's been going on quite a few years now. And there's just another ruling I saw today that an appeals court declined to move the location of the trial. And, you know, the big difference – and people sort of forget it – but Oakland, when the Raiders left town, Oakland – sued the NFL as well, but they sued them in federal court and it was quickly thrown out. This is in state court with state judges and potentially a state jury or a jury chosen locally. And that's a different kettle of fish. And you could argue that it's cooked, right? That this is biased against the NFL. But
some would say the move to LA was cooked.
Well, yes, I think the folks in St. Louis would argue that. But I was there then, and the committee that the NFL, in fact, I had a very small hand in the formation of that committee because I'd interviewed Jerry Jones the year before that, at the end of the year. And he said to me on the record, I actually think it's a two-team market, LA. And there was so much confusion about is it two or one that the committee that had Robert Kraft, Jerry Richardson, Art Rooney, Clark Hunt, that group got formed to sort of steer the process. And they voted 5-1 in favor of the Raiders and Chargers moving in-state, which also solved two stadium problems in one way. And at that fateful meeting in January of 2016, Jerry Jones pretty single-handedly lobbied for Stan Kroenke to win, and that's where we are now. So I think they assumed St. Louis would just go away, but they've got a big, thorny, multi-billion-dollar potential problem on their hands, and the problem is it's dragged other owners, not just Stan Kroenke, into it.
Well, his legal fees are apparently gotten crazy. And when Jim Irsay says, well, let's let Stan come in and talk to us. Stan only talks to his lawyers these days. What? I mean, I can't imagine seeing 32 billionaires in that room and watching them walk out. That must have been one hell of a parade out of that office, huh?
Yeah, well, that was a closed session, so only the 32 owners were in it, and a couple of legal folks too. It was a very detailed report by Seth at ESPN, and kudos to him. I'm not surprised it got prickly, because when owners like Clark Hunt and Robert Kraft are being deposed, then it's too close for comfort, right? Because then they're on the hook for something Stan is ultimately supposed to be paying for. And now Stan apparently is saying, well, I'm rethinking whether I want to pay for it all. The way these things go away is people settle. So they find a price somewhere that's agreeable to everybody and they work out the numbers. That's typically what happens in the American legal system.
I love your gig, Belson, man. You never know what's going to happen tomorrow. You know what I mean? Today we had a wide receiver kill someone on the freeway. And why? I mean, like, the league never sleeps. And I guess and this is where we can play nice at the end. If you watch football the last 8 weeks, it's a hell of a league, right? I mean, it's an amazing thing that happens in the fourth quarter when the game's 3 points or 7 points and the Bengals guy lowers his arm to tackle a guy. They throw a flag. People bet on this stuff, Ken. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's very good theater. I mean, I watched the Packers-Cardinals game the other day with the goal line. Well, the play that was over, the touchdown that was overturned, and then the goal line stand that the Cardinals had. It was good theater. I mean, even at the end with the mistake and the interception, the NFL has packaged a very good product. I wish the games were shorter, and you know, I wish I had red zone on my cell phone also. But I watch the games. I have play fantasy football like a lot of people, and I enjoy it. It is good theater, but. But, you know, it comes at a cost, and I brain damage being one of them for some players, unfortunately.
Oh, I thought you meant for the reporters. I'm sorry.
Well,
I thought you were making a joke. No, and I'm like, the CTE part, that's the original sin, right? Literally.
Well, sadly, you know, the reporting on retirees, retired players is really minimal. And I think that's the sad part. A lot of these players suffer that once they leave the field, and that's something I've paid a lot of attention to. And they have a host of problems. And often Americans and the Football League itself just wash their hands of it. And that's very unfortunate to me.
Ken, I felt that as well because the team came here in 1996. I was 27 years old. Most of the players were my age. I'm now 53. We're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Super Bowl 35 team, and we didn't celebrate. It was actually supposed to be celebrated this week. Because of COVID, they didn't do it. And, you know, there are players that are gone, missing, friends of mine, people I know that I can't call anymore because they're not right, and they're never going to be right again, and they're my age. So I think the rest of my life I will be seeing and feeling that in a different way than I was with, how much is that PSL? I want to have purple underwear. Let's go Ravens. I think as I get older, I start to see it differently, and I definitely see it differently when I see owners fighting with each other over teams being stolen and taken away and all that. It reminds me of my youth. Hey, I appreciate your visit. You're always in good spirits. You've always been great, great information, and I'm the one guy out there when you're doing all this hard work. I'm the first guy in line reading, and I appreciate you, Ken Belson. So thanks for coming on.
That's very nice of you to say. Thanks for having me on.
L. Belson, you can follow him, L_Belson. He's at the New York Times. They do serious work there. Follow along if you care about any of this serious reporting. And meantime, Luke is out in Owings Mills. If you just care about the football team, it's all brought to you by Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. All of our reports getting up on Minnesota. The short week for Miami next week. And, of course, our Maryland Crab Cake Tour coming to a neighborhood near you. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore, we never stop talking intelligent, wise conversations. And Baltimore Positive.